Contented Media presents Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, an original podcast series with Mark Hunter and Arthur Van Pelt.
Hello and welcome to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto, with me, Mark Hunter, and my ever-dependable sidekick, Arthur Van Pelt. Arthur, it's been a while. How have you been?
Yes, Mark. I'm very well. After the surprise ruling on the March of the 14, what was it, that Craig is not Satoshi, yeah, it was a relief, and I'm still living in a sort of... I wouldn't call it cloud nine, but it's getting close. It's like, wow, the 5 years of my work, it was a hobby, but still it took some effort, and I spent quite a few hours writing all my stuff, researching all his claims. But now that it has come to conclusion, it's a sort of a burden falling from my shoulders, and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the aftermath, so to say.
Yeah, you know what I found interesting actually is we were expecting to be sort of nervous, if you like, because you never know with a judge and with the legal system, but we were expecting like a month or so of nerves, of tension, of what's he going to rule, how's it going to go. But the fact that he just got rid of that, it's just made, I think, even for people on the other side, oh, we know what's coming. It's done. And whatever happens from now is like, it's just kind of the inevitable. So it's actually quite a nice position to be in. Even though we expected Cooper was going to win, it's actually quite a nice position to be in, isn't it? Where they've already won. It's just, how bad is it going to be? So like, it's only going to get better from here.
You can only make educated guesses about it, but it is very convenient for parties, especially COPA, of course, but also the Bitcoin developers and other parties, Coinbase, Kraken, all the parties involved there, that the ruling already... fell on the last day of the trial, because it gives a lot of clarity for the trajectory that parties have to follow in the aftermath of this ruling.
Now, we hadn't planned to do any more recordings until Justice Miller drops what is likely to be a heavy ruling next week, where we learn just how fucked Craig Wright really is. But we've seen some action concerning not just the Cooper case, but several other cases too, all of which we've covered in one way or another on this podcast over the past 2.5 years or so. This being the case, we thought it important to do a catch-up and clear the decks ready for next week. So, Arthur, we'll start with the Cooper case. Now, the trial concluded on Thursday, March the 14th, with Wright declared not Satoshi, as we all vividly remember. But there's been some back and forth over the costs, including not one, but two freezing orders. Now, we need to start this story with a company called RCJBR Holding Limited, which was formed on October the 3rd, right after Craig Wright left Enchain. Craig Wright and his wife Ramona Ang were named as directors of this company, with Ang being awarded all the shares in the company, which Wright valued at £5 million. Now, if all this sounds horribly familiar, just wait. 3 weeks after it formed, on October the 21st, Wright doubled the number of shares, in turn doubling the company's value to £10 million, backdating this increase to October the 10th. The same day, he made another filing where the share count doubled again, this time dating it to the previous day. Somehow, out of nowhere, RCJBR held 20 million shares and was worth £20 million. Arthur, the suggestion here is that, on paper, at least, these shares are worth £20 million, but I'm assuming that this figure came from Craig Wright writing a number on a piece of paper rather than any actual business conducted.
Yeah, that's hard to say. We can form our opinion based on some rumors that we read. We can see what is happening in those filings in England, but my suggestion, in my opinion, this also leans towards a paper-only valuation of something that is actually worth nothing. So he creates something from thin air, and he files it at the company's house in England. So again, I'm only guessing here, but Craig Wright might use those numbers in Singapore to probably falsely claim wealth as a backup to, possibly his next scam in that country. But yeah, again, this is only making really, really wild guesses about things that we don't know for real.
On March the 18th, just one working day after Justice Miller's verbal verdict, Wright filed notice that RCJBR had a new shareholder, De Morgan, a Singapore-based entity under Wright's control since December 2013. De Morgan took half of the 20 million shareholding, leaving Ramona Ang with the other half, and listed another shareholder, Craig Wright, with zero. What's interesting about this is that Wright was never listed as a shareholder in the first place, and he had backdated the supposed transfer of his shares to the 5th of February, the day the Cooper versus Wright trial started. Arthur, we're all well aware of Craig Wright's penchant for backdating, but what was the advantage to pretending that he owned the shares in the first place and then got rid of them on the day the trial started?
Now that's again something that we can only make an educated guess about at this moment in time. So it could be a distraction, could be as a typical 5D chess game that he's playing. It could be a sort of amateur psyop that Craig Wright is performing in his own style, just to deceive the people who are chasing him for money. Pick one, I would say. This is something that we cannot fully grasp yet unless we see all the full evidence pop up in court again under the watchful eye of Justice Miller.
Yeah, the only reason I can think of him for backdating it like that is to make it seem like he didn't do it in the immediate aftermath of the trial, so he can say, oh no, I did it in February. It wasn't me reacting to the verdict, but it was backdated. It's so obvious it was backdated. The first day he got the chance after the verdict, pretty much, backdated it specifically to the very first day of the trial.
Yeah.
And then he never owned any shares in the company. So he pretended he owned the shares and then got rid of them. I wonder if he thinks he's being clever, but it actually just looks really bad for him.
Yeah, in that sense, of course, yes, certainly.
Cooper was naturally alarmed by this development and sought a worldwide freezing order, claiming that Wright was in the process of moving his assets overseas to make himself as untouchable as he has claimed to be due to his various trusts and overseas companies. It quickly submitted its costs to the court, which came to a tidy £6.7 million, and sought the freezing order, in which it listed 9 points to bolster its argument, including that Wright had, quote, shown himself prepared to lie and double down on his lies on such a grand scale that his commercial morality can only be assessed as being unacceptably low, unquote, recited his previous boast that he has made himself untouchable by making sure he doesn't control any of his own assets, and the fact that he has, quote, a history of default in relation to orders for the payment of money, unquote. These include the $143 million he owes W&K, the £389,000 he owes Hodlenaut after his defeat in Norway, and costs for other dropped lawsuits, which we'll come to later. Arthur, there was also mention of a £1.9 million bank guarantee. What's the story there?
Oh yeah, that was an order by Justice Miller that actually COPA also had to provide security for costs, for Craig Wright in this case, since COPA is an organization without a balance sheet and they don't own any assets themselves. What happened here is that for this reason, Justice Miller also requested that COPA gave an security for costs for 1.9 million British pounds. And on the June the 2nd of 2023, the Barclays Bank provided that in the form of a bank guarantee for that amount on behalf of COPA. It makes sense because the Tulip Trust also has been scrutinized for this for the same type of thing. So why not the other party for somewhat the same reason? Mm-hmm. But of course, COPA is 100,000 times more legit than the Tulip Trust. But that's another story.
Yes. So Justice Miller, as we know, granted an order for £6 million on March the 27th, stating that it was, quote, undoubtedly the case that COPA and the developers are the winning party. They are highly likely, to say the least, to obtain an order for their costs. Furthermore, in the circumstances, it is likely that these costs will be awarded on the indemnity basis, unquote. Now, of course, we know that when a party loses a lawsuit, it has to pay the costs of the other side. This is known as standard basis. However, there is also the indemnity basis, which is when the court orders the losing party to pay costs at a higher rate than would normally be awarded. This might be done in circumstances where, according to Craig Wright's friend ChatGPT, quote, the losing party's conduct has been particularly unreasonable, such as cases of misconduct, frivolous claims, or where the losing party has acted unreasonably in the conduct of the litigation, unquote. Arthur, I think that gives us another indication of what's to come, doesn't it?
Yeah, say no more. how more clear can you be?
Yeah.
It already started on March the 14th when Justice Mellor said the evidence is overwhelming. So yeah, this is the next indication that Craig Wright can expect a not very favorable ruling. And then I'm being kind here.
Yeah, definitely. Justice Mellor ruled that Wright's RCJBR asset move, quote, gave rise to various concerns on COPA's part that Dr. Wright was implementing measures to seek to evade the costs consequences of his loss at trial, unquote. The order froze all Wright's bank accounts and other assets until the $6 million had been sent to the court, with Justice Mellor demanding that Wright provide a breakdown of his assets and cash balances by 4 p.m. on Friday, 5th of April. If the money was paid into the court's funds office and the asset declaration sent by that date, then the order would cease to have effect. On Friday 5th of April, Craig Wright indeed sent COPA his list of assets, as well as depositing a cheque for £6 million into the court's funds office. This, in theory, released him from the order. However, COPA was unhappy with two things. Firstly, Wright's asset declaration consisted of a year-old 500-page behemoth taken from the Kleiman case, rendering it largely useless to them. And secondly, the cheque would take days to clear, during which time Wright could sell his assets, with COPA not knowing if the cheque would end up bouncing or not. This was of particular concern, given that the little information the asset declaration form did show them was that Wright, as he promised, possessed nothing like the funds to pay COPA's bills. As a result, COPA asked Justice Mellor to force Wright to complete an up-to-date asset declaration and rule that Wright had not met his obligation over the payment, thus not releasing him from the freeze order. Arthur, if the $6 million Wright paid in wasn't made up of his assets, I assume it was just sitting in his bank account?
I don't think so. Now, it's again something that we could only guess, but here we find some, more than a few hints. How that went, because what we read in the ruling is that Craig Wright received a deposit for £6 million British pounds on April the 3rd from an unknown third party. Then Wright's bank sent him an email, also on April the 3rd, telling him that the £6 million deposit had cleared. Now, Wright then cut a check and forwarded the email to COPA and the general counsel for the Air Group, which is now in charge of Enchain. Now, the Air Group is, of course, run by Kelvin Air. Mm-hmm. Now, we are also led to believe that the check was hand-delivered to the court funds office by someone from Felitor Law, which is Kelvin Air's law firm. Hmm. Now, yeah, I mean, of course, it's only my opinion, but this is clearly Kelvin Air's hand in the whole thing again.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere that Craig Wright now had to fund his legal activities through selling his Enchain stock. So could he be selling his stock to Enchain and this is them sending him the money for those sales?
That is probably what happened there. If you ask me, all roads lead to Rome. Kelvin Air. Again, it's only my opinion, but there are pretty solid indications that Kelvin Air struck a deal with Craig Wright, and then we understood that Craig's share in Enchain were part of that deal. Now, yeah, that can only mean one thing, that is that Craig, and probably his wife is involved in that also, we don't know, but at least Craig Wright sold his shares for cash in his hands, and with that cash he is now paying his lawsuits. And if Enchain is the buyer, or a subsidiary of Enchain, or Kelvin Air, or a sock puppet of Kelvin Air, in the end, it's very likely, again, it's only my opinion, that Kelvin Air is pulling the strings on these financial deals with Craig Wright.
The hearing over these issues took place on April 12th, 2 days after Wright's £6 million cheque cleared, but if he thought he could start selling his assets again, he was mistaken. The developers were awarded their own freezing order for just over £1 million. However, this payment cleared on Friday, meaning that the freezing order is now dropped, he can keep his secrets about his assets to himself, in the UK at least, and the developers can get their legal fees paid. That brings us up to date with the costs issue, but there's one last thing that's worth noting regarding Wright International Investments UK Limited, which is the third claimant alongside Craig Wright himself and the Seychelles-based Wright International Investments in the COPA case. The UK variant was formed through a Mayfair-based wealth management firm in March 2022 and has conducted so little business that in December last year it had to file accounts for a dormant company. This filing came 2 months after Stephen Matthews had been booted from his position as director of the company in the wake of the Christian Agger Hansen leaks, with all the shares in the company moving at the same time to, here we go again, RCJBR Holding. Given that the 100 shares had a nominal value of just £1 each, this might not have been a particularly big deal, but in its dormant company accounts, Craig Wright had to list the cash on hand in the company's bank accounts. And how much did this nothing of a shell company apparently have in the bank? £15 billion, to the penny. No one can't accuse Craig Wright of not being able to spin a good yarn. That's it for the COPA versus Wright case for now, but you can bet your shares in RCJBR that we'll be talking about it in a few days' time when Justice Mellor's 100-page evisceration drops, which will be either Friday 26th or Monday 29th. But we've had a lot more going on outside the COPA case in the last few weeks regarding Craig Wright's other lawsuits. Arthur, we'll start with the Hodlenaut case in Norway. Now, as a quick recap, Craig Wright has got two cases going on with Hodlenaut, one in Norway, one in the UK. The reason for this, very briefly, is that when he filed in Norway, the idea there was to have the case there solely, which would then kick the UK case that Craig Wright hadn't yet filed out, if it was filed.
Yeah.
Craig filed the UK case shortly afterwards, and through a long process, the UK judge ruled that the cases were not identical. There was enough distinction between the two cases in terms of the potential final ruling for them to carry on concurrently. Mm. So, of course, Craig Wright went ahead and he lost in Norway. And at the moment, the UK case is held pending the result from the COPA case. So that's where we were until about a week or so ago. But Arthur, what happened with the Hodlenaut case in Norway last week?
Yeah, we heard from Hodlenaut that Craig discontinued the appeal. This was actually not really, really a surprise for me, because, of course, the Hodlenaut case in Norway depends on Craig Wright being Satoshi. There was also an he did follow through with a truth defense. Remember all that. 71 forgeries were found, and it ended up that the judge there ruled that Craig Wright is, in her opinion, not Satoshi Nakamoto, and it was very understandable that he was called a fraud, and etc. So basically, when this case is also depending on Craig Wright being Satoshi, and when the Satoshi question is coming up in that lawsuit and in that appeal again, when you're in England declared not Satoshi Nakamoto, yeah, of course it will have a rather strong and substantial influence in Norway, I guess.
If you take the fact he has dropped the appeal and he lost the COPA case, I think it would be a massive, massive surprise for me if he pursued the UK case, because he just hasn't got a leg to stand on anymore, has he, as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, but that is then talking about surprises. That is for me the surprise that he did not drop both cases at the same time. Mm. That is what Craig Wright could and should have done. He should have dropped not only the Norway case, but also the UK case, because there are basically, of course, there is, according to the judge, a little bit of a difference, but it's basically the same case. Only the opposite, the reverse of Norway. Norway is a negative declaratory relief case. Mm-hmm. While in England, it's a case of Craig Wright against Hodlenaut, claiming this is a libel. Mm. So, yeah, basically the same case. But as far as I'm aware, both had truth defense, Norway at least. And as far as we know, in the UK, same story. There is a truth defense. Now, if the truth defense in England is already... Craig Wright is not Satoshi, then he basically has lost the libel case in the UK also.
Mm. Yeah, he would be crazy to pursue it. I was just thinking, if there's a way to argue the case without him needing to be Satoshi, if it was a purely libel case, like, I mean, you know, technically speaking, he beat Peter McCormack because it on the fact that it was libelous. It was defamation. So regardless of the base behind it, it was defamation. So could he argue that he was still being defamed even with this ruling that from COPA? But I just, if Hodnot's going with the truth defence, I can't see any avenue by which he can slip down to victory by which it's worth even trying to pursue it. Can you?
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, okay. So I think we're both pretty much convinced that at some point he'll drop that one. And if he doesn't, it's going to be fascinating to see how he tries to tackle that. So that was the first one that dropped. And then we had a bit of a flurry last week when he dropped pretty much four cases around the same day. So the first three are the copyright cases, which we covered in a bonus episode last March and which I put out for free last week. These three cases were three of the cases that were bound by the result of the COPA case, because if our listeners remember, late last year, Craig Wright pushed for this, idiotically, in my opinion. He pushed to have the COPA verdict apply to a whole host of cases being filed in the UK, including these three copyright cases. Mm. So as a quick reminder, Arthur, correct me if I'm wrong on some details here, but I believe there was the... He said because he was Satoshi, he owned the copyright over the Bitcoin white paper. Mm. He owned the Bitcoin... owned the copyright over the Bitcoin database, and he owned the copyright over the Bitcoin file format. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is how I summarize it all the time also. File format, database rights, and the copyright on the Bitcoin white paper and source code.
Yeah, great. Okay. So those three were being filed as three separate cases. But of course, they were contingent on the COPA results. Now, because we haven't really had the final ruling from Justice Mellor yet, and therefore Craig Wright may appeal the COPA verdict. We're not sure yet, although it's looking increasingly unlikely, as we'll discuss. It was a bit of a surprise to me to find out through someone who's involved in that case that he has privately accepted defeat on the three copyright cases. It's not been made official yet, but, you know, we have a very, very, very good authority that's the case. So if you think about the potential impact that those cases could have had if he'd have won one, two, or even all three of them, that's quite a big result for Bitcoin, isn't it, to have those three dropped in one go like that?
Yeah, that was actually, it's almost a must accept defeat because it was already in a ruling last year of Justice Mellor that he said that he considers when the COPA identity issue case is going for trial and after the trial he rules that Craig Wright is not Satoshi, then almost automatically he considered that the two passing off cases against Coinbase and Kraken plus this copyright case consisting of three sub things that we just mentioned is lost also. That was already made clear by Justice Mellor. So of course Craig Wright can only accept this defeat, that in one blow not only the COPA identity issue case has gone for him, but automatically also the other three cases.
So the fact that he's lost the copyright on the white paper, that obviously has no immediate impact on his US claim. But do you think the fact that Justice Mellor has dismissed specifically the white paper copyright claim, do you think that will have any impact on any potential legal challenge to Craig Wright's US copyright claim?
No, what I expect, but I'm not sure, of course, but what I expect is that COPA is going all the way, taking the extra mile, and make clear, for example, that the white paper can be, and also other things can be downloaded from bitcoin.org, and also that Craig Wright should delete his registration at Copyright Office.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if what's going on here resonates over there. Mm. So those were the three copyright cases that, as you say, were dropped automatically. As far as the passing off cases go, we haven't got any word on those, but and until Coinbase and Kraken say something, we have to assume, as you say, that they have been dropped, but we can't be sure of that. So those were the cases that were conditional upon the COPA result. One case that wasn't conditional on the COPPA result was the Pineapple Hack case. So, Arthur, again, we've discussed this many, many times on the podcast, but can you just give us a very brief 1 or 2 minute précis of the Pineapple Hack case, please, and what it could have meant?
It's quite a case, actually, because this is where I think is where the big money is also involved, also in other cases, but especially in this case, because this looked like, to me, the sort of a stepping stone case for Craig Wright to initially claim roughly 110,000 Bitcoin and some forks of Bitcoin, which run into between four and a half billion US dollars. If that case was won by Craig Wright, then he would, the next step would be that he is going also for the Satoshi mined stash. And there we see amounts being mentioned of 820,000, 1 million, 1.1 million. But the Tulip Trust list is for me a bit the leading paper, which is a forgery anyway, but that contained 820,000 Bitcoin. Now, yeah, that is roughly eight times more almost as the Pineapple Hack case. Now, and that goes back to 2020, just after Craig Wright filed the Tulip Trust list. Only a little bit later, there was a hack. This is what he claimed in February. He filed that list in January 2020. And in February 2020, there was a hack. He claimed sort of, we called it an Ocean 11 style hack, because they have been entering his house, the planting Wi-Fi device behind his television. And then from a distance, they hack his network. He lost his access to two addresses, the one fixed address, 12 IB7 address. And at some point, he started to annoy the developers. You have to help me get those coins back, because you have the fiduciary duty to help me with that. This case was not halted, not for the Satoshi identity reason, because to own the one fixed address and to own the 12 IB7 address, you don't have to be Satoshi. You can be anyone. So this case was not depending on that outcome. On the other hand, the case was halted, sort of anyway, to benefit a preliminary issues trial. They found so many bookkeeping fraud. They found a purchase order file that was not that was backdated from after 2015 back to 2010 or 2011, when he claims to have bought those coins. Again, this did not depend on the Satoshi claim. So we did not expect a discontinuation of this lawsuit. But still he did. And that was actually a surprise for me.
I think it's funny, because I got the feeling this was one he was going to try and see through to the bitter end, just because of what was on the table for him, what he could potentially get. But I think he really, really messed up when some of the evidence, as you say, some of the evidence from the COPPA trial got mixed up in this. And this led, I'm not sure if it was directly or indirectly now, but basically he had to withdraw the only two pieces of contemporaneous evidence he had to back up the fact that Tulip Trading owned these coins when they said they did. He had to withdraw both of those pieces of evidence because they were found to be fraudulent. Mm. So the claim that his companies owned these coins at the time, they had no basis left at all. So I think as soon as I found that out, I thought, well, he's got nothing left to rely on apart from his crackpot stories, and it should be easy to pull apart. So for me, it's not a surprise that it got pulled. I think, yeah, it was not inevitable, but I think there was so much mixed up, so much evidence kind of contaminated by what happened through COPPA. Mm. And there was the fact, as Mr. Gunning pointed out in the COPPA case, there was the fact that Justice Miller may well rule on the validity or otherwise of the Tulip Trust.
Yeah.
So, and if he does, that could be massively detrimental to that case. So this is why Craig Wright could be thinking, well, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get a negative ruling on the Tulip Trust through the COPPA case, so I'll pull it now to avoid doing it down the line. So that was the other reason that got me thinking, is why he'd done it. But this one is extraordinary, because if you think what has gone into this, like going right back to 2020, as you say, there's the claim of the hack, there's the letters to the developers, there was that strange notice that got put in the Financial Times, was it?
Yep.
That thing about if you own the one fixed address, speak now or forever hold your peace. There's the police report, as you say, but they've never ever publicised it. The biggest heist in British history, never mentioned publicly. Mm. The whole thing has just been so crazy from start to finish. And I'm glad it hasn't gone through to trial for the sake of the developers, who would have to be putting up costs and this sort of thing. So at least that protects them to a point, although they've still got to get some costs back that they've already expended. But it's a shame that we wouldn't have seen this go through to trial, because can you imagine what a half-decent legal team would have done faced with a story like that and no evidence? It would have been an utter humiliation.
Yeah, absolutely. But if I put that aside, I'm happy for the developers that they are now released of all the stress that they have been through for the last few years. So that is a win-win, if you ask me. But from a legal standpoint, it would still interest me if this case had led to somewhat shocking or earth-shattering rulings about the fiduciary duties of open source developers. In one hand, I don't think it would change much. It would solidify their status a bit more, which would be good for the future and for other projects that are working with open source and with developers working on those open source projects. Mm-hmm. And it would also give more clarity about the MIT license, if it is fully suitable for the situation that it is supposed to cover. For example, they could also fine-tune the mid-license a bit more, so that developers are always covered under "there is no fiduciary duty of any kind in the work that I am doing here, whatever software I'm creating under the MIT license." Mm-hmm. So we missed that clarity. That's only from a legal standpoint that is completely besides the stress that the developers have been through. But that would have interested me how that could or would have ended with a ruling from Mueller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's everything that's happened with the cases that we know there's been action on. So just to recap then, Hoddenort appeal has been that's been pulled, but the UK case is still going ahead for now. The three copyright cases have all been pulled or automatically lost. The passing off cases, we assume, have been automatically lost, but nothing confirmed as yet. And the Pineapple Hack case, which wasn't contingent on COPA, has been pulled. So he's down to probably just one court case left out of all the almost double figures he's been running up since 2019. So All this talk of 5D chess and ruining people, this, that and the other, it's all in the last few weeks just utterly fallen apart, which is obviously fantastic to see. So he hasn't accepted defeat in the COPA case yet. He's waited to see what the final ruling is, but I think we can tell from the hints Justice Mueller has given us and the acts that Craig Wright has been carrying out in dropping these court cases. I think, Arthur, we were all wondering whether he was going to appeal or not, but I think even he has realised that in this case, appeal is going to be utterly pointless. I think that's the impression I'm getting, is that when this ruling comes, he's already hinted there's going to be no appeal.
For me, it's quite clear that there will be no appeal, and that the most clear hint that he has been giving is dropping the appeal in Norway. Look at it from another angle. If he was sure that he was going to appeal in the UK, then he could just run the appeal, hoping to win. And if he wins the appeal in UK against COPA, then he, not automatically probably, but almost automatically, he can, at least he will get a very strong position in the appeal in Norway. Mm. So in reverse, when he drops Norway with the truth defense that he already lost, by the way, of course, also with those forgeries. So, yeah, it's quite funny because it already beforehand, even before the trial started, it was already pretty clear to me it's going to be a redux of the Norway case.
On a bigger scale.
Only on the bigger scale, sure. A few more witnesses, 5 or 10 times more forgeries. But exactly the same type of evidence that is not being accepted in court. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was not a surprise to me that Justice Miller said the evidence is overwhelming. Yeah, it has been since 2015 already.
Mm. If he doesn't appeal, how much do you think the lack of an appeal and the fact he's dropped these cases, even ones that weren't directly connected to the Cooper case, how much do you think that's down to the cost of the appeal and his financial situation?
No, yeah, that is another thing. We have no idea, of course, but let's still presume that he sold the shares to Calvin Air, and we can only make an educated guess how much those shares were worth. We only know for sure that when in 2015 he got a share, roughly around one third of the company, and then it all depends. Did he sell some of those shares? By the way, that is together with his wife. He did not have those shares alone. Mm-hmm. Let's say one third. What has been sold down the line between 2015 and 2023-24? We don't know. How much is Enchain being valuated? Yeah, probably not much because they hardly make any revenue. Currently, we don't know.
Okay. So we're about, best case scenario, a week away from Justice Miller's ruling, because he left things a little bit unsure, because he said 28th of April, but that's a Sunday, so we're not sure if it's coming the Friday before, which would be next Friday, or the Monday after. But whenever it does drop, has anything that you've heard between Justice Miller's verbal ruling in March and what you've seen with his actions, with Craig Wright's actions up to this point in the weeks in between, has anything changed your opinion as to what we're going to get from Justice Miller in that written ruling?
No, I'm of course very curious still about his explanations on several points. What is he thinking about the witnesses? Of course, the Batman Lego box comes to mind, of course. But what I would really appreciate is to read his mind on Stephen Matthews. Mm. How did he think that his testimony, which has had more clear details about things happening in 2007, 8, and 9, with white papers, with offerings of 50,000 BTC in 2009, and he was so clear, and yeah, I remember, and it happened, but it clearly did not happen, so he has been lying, and I really want to know what is his reasoning to come to that conclusion that Stephen Matthews has been lying. Same story for Jenkins, Mr. Jenkins, who told the judge that that he had seen a white paper called Time Coin. Mm-hmm. Now I immediately start laughing because the Time Coin white paper is only a forgery created in 2019 or 2020 or somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that did never exist in 2007 or around that era.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was technically completely impossible. So I immediately knew that guy was lying, and of course COPA's counsel immediately jumped on him. Also, I put it to you that it is not true.
Yeah.
Those type of things. Now the forgeries are pretty clear. There was one point that the BSV community made a big point out of it, which I also thought beforehand already, nah, this can't be a big point, is how Patrick Madden was not independent enough, because he had been to the COPA office several times and they had been helping him writing his report. They were too close together working on that report, almost as if COPA had been writing the report and Madden put his signature under it instead of the other way around, so to say. Now, that is probably a good point to watch out for in the final ruling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm of course most above all I'm very curious if Miller is going to follow COPA in their direction that they gave already in the closing submissions, that they are going for a criminal inquiry on the whole case for fraud and perjury and dishonesty, and see if how are they called, the Crown Prosecution mm-hmm. Services is willing to take it next level, and that might end up in Craig Wright going to jail.
You know what, I think we were all sort of hopeful and maybe kind of cautiously optimistic that that might happen when Justice Mellor gave his verbal ruling. But from what I've seen in the couple of filings that have come out and from the drip feeding we're getting from the things he's saying, I think this is going to be really, really bad for Craig Wright. I get the impression that this is going to be almost every single word he has said is a lie. I think we're going to that level. I think it's going to be worse than he can imagine, because I don't know, I just get this feeling that the judge is just so unimpressed. I think he's going to rip everything apart. He's seen through the whole lot. I'm more certain than I've ever been, having read through the filings, especially the last couple we've seen for this episode. I am leaning towards there being very serious repercussions for him.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I sense that too. To be clear, we don't even depend on Justice Mellor for a forward to the Crown Prosecution Services, because COPPA is already going to do it. So there's going to be an effort into the direction already. But it would be nice if Mellor would also support that. And looking at the freezing orders, COPPA, yeah, I can only compliment them from my side. They did this pretty well. They are on top of this case. So the moment they start sensing that Craig Wright was doing nasty things and in his filings at company's house, and they got a sense of he's trying to hide and move his assets away, they immediately jump on it and they get it done, that some $6 million is now in the courthouse bank. Mm-hmm. So COPPA will get their money back. Now, yeah, that's a big win. I wish the Kleiman and other parties that have been fighting Craig Wright for years could say the same.
Talking of costs, I'm not sure how much of the costs he put up. I know he had to put up something like about £1 million in total already for the developers as securities costs, but I'm not sure what he's had to do with the copyright cases and the passing off cases. But, you know, even if he's put up some costs for those, there's going to be potentially extra costs down the line there. So if you look back to 2019 when he started all this, I'm not sure if he was rolling in money back then, but he's just got to think now this has been a colossal waste of 5 years and a waste of millions and millions of pounds. What an absolute waste of time.
Yeah, many people already thought that beforehand. Whatever you think of those people at COPPA and the members of COPPA, but at least they did well for the Bitcoin community, very well, that this scammer who didn't is unstoppable for this type of scam with somebody, with a sugar daddy that is willing to pay everything for him. Mm-hmm. And especially the Bitcoin developers that have been involved in this, they had serious stress of this, and that was so unnecessary, but it happened. Now, yeah, glad that COPPA put an end to it.
Absolutely. So, talking of ends, Arthur, I have pleasure in saying the next time I speak to you, we will have a God knows how many page ruling in front of us to dissect, where hopefully we see the end of this guy once and for all. I'm very much looking forward to that day, whenever it might come. Next Friday or the Monday after, we're not sure, but that's going to be a hell of a moment, isn't it?
And then 5 days digesting that
yes,
that little Bible.
I'd like to say that we'll be straight on the podcast the second we get it, but it's going to take some time to digest it. So I don't know when we're going to be able to actually have had the time to go through it, pick everything out, and sit down to talk about it. We'll do it as quick as we possibly can.
Yeah.
But just keep an eye on our Twitter feed at Dr. Bitcoin Pod. Just to see when we will get the chance to do that. But that's the date for your diaries, is the 26th of April or the 29th of April. But whenever it comes, Arthur, I'll speak to you then.
Yes, sir. Thanks, man.
See ya.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice to get these episodes the moment they drop. And if you enjoyed what you heard, we'd really appreciate a star rating and even a review to help us get this out to as many people as possible. Our monthly bonus episodes are available to download from our website for a small consideration. And if you'd like to access all these bonus episodes, plus these monthly updates a few days early and other goodies, you can do so by becoming a Dr. Bitcoin supporter See the details in the show notes for information on how to do this, or head to our website, drbitcoinpod.com. That's drbitcoinpod.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at drbitcoinpod, and you can email us at drbitcoinpod@gmail.com. That's drbitcoinpod@gmail.com. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll speak to you again soon.
You've been listening to Dr. Bitcoin, the man who wasn't Satoshi Nakamoto. Written by Mark Hunter, with additional material by Arthur Van Pelt. Editing and production by Mark Hunter. This has been a Contented Media production.